The crowd would roar were we still in the building at 1507 West Canning Lane. Welcome, everybody, to the Atheist Experience. We are live today. It's Sunday, August 23rd, 2020. I'm your host, Matt Dillon. Joining me this week, my friend David McCraney, who you may know from the You Are Not So Smart podcast and youarenotsosmart.com. How you doing, David?
I'm so good. I'm not even going to do the whole plague thing. I'm doing pretty well today. Let's just account for that. Greatest on a curve.
I'm thrilled that you're here. We talked about doing this ages ago, and of course, you know, we're now in a position where there's more remote guests. We'll get to talking with David really quickly. I want to go through the standard announcements. By the way, if you're watching us live and you're on YouTube right now, right up above all the chat up there, there's that donation link. We're using that instead of other options because 100% of the money you guys donate today goes directly to the Atheist Community of Austin to help us have guests like David on and to continue producing the content that we do on a weekly basis. We're thrilled for all of our supporters, but donating directly there in YouTube is not the only way that you can participate and help out. There's also a merchandise link, which I'll put up on the screen for you now, bit.ly/AENmerch. And you can have either a YouTube membership or you can come be a supporter at Patreon or both. You can support us anywhere and everywhere. And the reason to do it is not for me. And unfortunately, it's not for David because he's only going to be with us infrequently. There's this crew that does all this work behind the scenes here. They're screening calls. They're monitoring video. They're monitoring audio. I don't know if that's a musical instrument or a bong, but... and the kitty cat. And the kitty cat's in charge of everything. And I also wanted to make note that if you're someone who's active in the community on Facebook as well, there are two new unofficial Atheist Experience fan groups, a philosophy fan group and a private group as well. The images are up on the screen now. For those, you can go and join, find out what's up with that and everything else. How long ago did we meet? Because I met David because you did a podcast with my friend Brian Brushwood.
Yep.
And Brian was like, oh, you got to check out this podcast. And I was like, okay. And then from that point on, because I don't really listen to much in the way of podcasts, and yours is one of the only ones that I would ever listen to and recommend. And my pitch for you, every time somebody's like, oh, what's the deal with this David McCraney? And you're not, oh, man, it's a great podcast. And unlike everybody else, he actually goes out and does research. So like when he's talking about the Dunning-Kruger effect, he gets Professor Dunning on to talk about it. How can you go wrong? How can you not be educated? How did you get started doing all this? And hi, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. And yeah, we've known each other about 3.5-4 years because of all that you just mentioned. Yeah. How did I get started doing this? I started out as a journalist. I was a print journalist back when that was a thing that was a viable career. And I was and I moved into television journalism, and I became sort of a editor at the TV station I was at, and I was no longer getting to write very much. And I had majored in school as in psychology and journalism, and I was the kind of person that would be on like the road trip that would say, you know, actually that's something, a little something called, or like Dunning-Kruger effect or something. And I really wanted to write again, and I did what anybody would do back in that time, which I started a blog. And I thought a cool blog would be a blog about biases and fallacies and the psychology of reasoning, stuff like that. That was what I was always interested in. And I had seen a YouTube video where Darren Brown had did the person swap experiment, which is an experiment I already knew about from university, which was, if you're not familiar with it for the audience, that's whenever in the real experiment, somebody turns in a paper to their experimenter and they turn the paper into an assistant. The assistant's actually a subject in the experiment. They don't know it. They duck down as if they've dropped the paper. And then when the person that stands up is a different person, and then they just ask people if they noticed anything. And in the actual experiment, 30 to 50% of people did not notice that a different person handed them back the paper. In the Darren Brown version of it, he asks for directions. And as he's getting the directions, people walk between him and the person he's talking to, and they switch places, and the same thing happens. So I was just like, this is so cool. People should see this, and they should know the psychology behind it. And I started a blog with that. And it wasn't too long after that it became popular enough that I got offered a book deal. And then it wasn't too long after that that I wanted to promote my second book with a podcast. And then I just happened to be in the right place at the right time with podcasting. And now the podcast is sort of the centerpiece of what I do.
Well, I was fortunate because after, you know, I'm just sitting there listening to the podcast going, oh, this is great. And at some point, I would have to dig through old emails, but at some point we got in touch and you were working on something specific and you came down and hung out at the house and you said you were going to do an interview and it would take 30 minutes. And I was like, you've never spoken to me. There's no way.
That's true. I remember what happened. It was, I had someone on the show talking about how would you convince a super duper religious person to see things differently. And I told them there was no way. And then you sent me an email that said, that's not true at all. I've done that before. And you should learn more about it.
Yeah.
And it just so happened I was starting a book about persuasion and how people change their minds and how social change works. And so I came and yeah, we talked for like 5 hours straight. It was maybe the longest conversation I've ever had in my life.
And I'm not sorry because we're still talking. And it was nice you came down to visit. You introduced me to the Oculus Quest and all that stuff. But you're working on a lot of different projects. You got two books done already. You Are Not So Smart, which is named directly after the podcast. And the second one, whose name?
You Are Now Less Dumb.
You Are Now Less Dumb. I always want to say you are no longer dumb, but you are now less dumb, which is
great. just less dumb. That was the important part.
Yeah, because I would say that less dumb is probably a good starting goal for almost everybody, especially when I look around the world today and I see people who seem frustrated and confused at the basics on occasion. And I wonder what goes through their head, but also, every time I start to think about what goes through their head, I have to pause and go, hang on, what's going through my head right now? Is there some bias that I'm using to try to inject on top of that person and have them fit into some mold that I have?
That's such a big part of the philosophy of what I do. Because like our recent episodes on the podcast have been about anti-maskers, people who refuse to wear masks during the coronavirus. The next episode is going to be about people who may not want to get the vaccine. And I often like to do shows that will not only explain what is the underlying psychology as best we understand it behind that kind of behavior, but how is that universal? And it's something that you probably would do in a different context or in a different situation, and that you're not separate. There's a real unity in the humility that I try to like offer by saying this is the human condition and this is what we know about it so far as social science has advanced as in this domain.
Yeah, there's very different things. And we talked about it really briefly before we even got started. Obviously, there's the difference between what is happening in someone's head that leads them to a particular conclusion or leads them to avoid a particular conclusion. Mm-hmm. And then there's the field of epistemology, which is completely different. And it's probably a source of monumental frustration for some people that I'm so heavily focused on the epistemology and less focused on the psychology, which is one of the reasons why I'm really glad that not only are you here today, but Shannon Q is, you know, one of the regular co-hosts now as well. So the treatment with regard to the psychology in these discussions, and when I say treatment, I'm not saying I'm a psychologist treating people. I'm saying that what we do when we're having these discussions with people, because we're getting ready to start taking calls,
sure,
and I don't know where they're going to go.
Yeah.
And in some cases, it's going to be, hang on, are we talking about epistemology? And, you know, do you have good reasons for this? And in other cases, it's going to be, I understand why you think the way you do, or perhaps even if I don't understand why you think the way you do, maybe we can ask the questions to get you to kind of reflect on it. And so you mentioned, street epistemology beforehand. You ready to jump in, take some calls, have some fun?
I'm absolutely ready. This should be super fun. And I love it when you talk about reasons because, well, we'll get there. Because in psychology, you know, they say reasoning just means what happens when a brain tries to come up with reasons for what it thinks, feels, and believes. So some of the terminology has a little Venn diagram thing, which I think is really nice. And it's always fun to spend time with you and see how the things cross over each other.
Well, let's hope that this isn't the hour and a half that is the longest of your life.
I don't mind. That was a good hour and a half.
Nah, this goes quick. I want to get started. We've got Jacob in Illinois. You're on with David and Matt. How are you?
Hi. So I'm a really big fan of you, Matt. I've been super binging your videos for like the past few weeks because I realized the only reason that I was still following the religion that I was following was out of fear. And that's not really a healthy thing to believe in something for. So But I haven't become fully atheist because I think that we kind of have a conscience. Like, okay, so I think that the whole world is connected in some way. Like, I've watched a few testimonies, which I'm sure you've probably watched them before too, and they have explained what has happened in their brain when they were in a coma, and they said that they've had these experiences that happen to also be in the Bible, saying, but they didn't even read that part. So I was like, that could be possibly true. You know what I'm saying? You get what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we'd probably need something more specific, but if we want to talk about it in general terms, my question for anything that's like near death or coma, or when you talk about a brain remembering things that are happening, part of it is how much of that's constructed after the fact by the brain, like, oh, I'm missing some time, I need to make some sort of story up, and how much of it is bits and pieces of what we just generally experience, because being unconscious is not the same as being dead.
Mm-hmm. Well, so the testimony that I saw was there was this man who went into a coma, and in the experience, he said that he saw these animals next to God that had eyes all over them, but he had never read that in the Bible. So that was something that kind of convinced me that it could be real.
If I can jump in, I mean, you said that you feel like everything is connected. Well, yeah, everything is connected. We're all made of atoms, molecules, and bound by the forces of nature as we understand them. So I don't have a problem with that. Maybe you would have to clarify that for me as to see if you see it differently than I do. And yeah, brains that go into comas, and yeah, there's a lot of research into this that show, or people that have near-death experiences, as you know, if you want to call it that, it has different terminology in the literature. But people tend to have universal experiences because we all tend to have universal experiences when the brain is under the same influences, right? So you drink alcohol and you'll have the same experience that somebody has that had in 1851, and the same experience somebody will have in 2051. And the same experience people have all over the world geographically, because brains are broadly very similar. And I would imagine if people had experiences in ancient times, in ancient texts, their experiences were also similar. So the question would be, from the perspective of, you know, neuroscience and psychology, what is driving that experience? And just because people have similar subjective, personal, anecdotal accounts doesn't necessarily mean that we can make the great leap as to the explanation behind whether things are happening. So am I on the right track with you there?
Yeah. So you're saying the people who wrote the Bible had a similar experience, but that doesn't make it real.
Well, it's real in the sense that it happened, but what the way they're explaining it, their like rationalization of it, the story they're creating from it, is going to be bound by what they understood in that time period and their own personal experience. So, and also their own personal expertise on the matter. So it's not saying it didn't happen. It's saying it may not. The leap that's being made, the narrative that's being constructed, is something we'd have to test.
Right. Okay. So
there is another aspect of this too that I figured I'd jump in with. Let me put my magician's hat back on. You seem to be somewhat impressed with the fact that this guy described something which, to your understanding, is in the Bible, and yet hadn't actually read that part of the Bible. And I don't ever find things like that remotely impressive, because people will describe their alien abduction stories, and their description of aliens will be similar, even if they haven't seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind, or even if, you know, they haven't. Our the world we live in, these stories are shared and told, and it's entirely possible that somebody could have heard these sorts of stories or seen something without being aware of it, without ever going near the Bible as a source. That there's something in the back of their mind that's just been sitting there percolating. And then when they have this sort of experience, their brain fills in with whatever details it can muster from what it thinks it's supposed to do. Now, I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm just saying, I don't know how we can rule that out. And that's why I'm not impressed when somebody says, oh, I saw this, even though I've never read the Bible. Well, first of all, why would you say I've never read the Bible? I mean, clearly you knew that the person knew that this was something that was in the Bible. There's no reason for them to deny it. So it's, or, you know,
His father was a preacher. So like,
his father was a preacher. Doesn't that make it even less impressive that he, you know,
well, but, he made it sound like he didn't know that specific part of the Bible, which is why I was impressed.
I don't believe him. I genuinely don't believe him. I don't believe there's somebody with a pastor as a father who hasn't bothered to read the Bible and yet has a vision that matches something in the Bible, and then we're supposed to act surprised. I mean, he grew up around this stuff. How could you not be in a house where your father's practicing sermons and things
Yeah. But I could give him the benefit of the doubt. I mean, you know, the story of the serpent appears across all sorts of religious texts, and that's because, and I would reason to say that, I mean, yeah, ancient people had to worry about snakes. And so it's going to pop up in your mythology. So either way, it doesn't lend credit to it, is what I would say.
Yeah. And even if we believed that this person had this particular vision, the question then still exists, does that vision tell us anything at all about whether or not the religious iconography that is there is tied to something that's real and true outside of us? It's already tied to us. You know, we are similar brains addressing similar problems and trying to come up with solutions and explanations. So yeah, I'm with David in that it may not be surprising that somebody, you know, in the first century had a similar vision or experience to somebody in the 21st century. I'm also not surprised that, you know, a preacher's kid might have gleaned some bit of information. But at the end of the day, even if the story were straight up, like someone who had never been around religion of any type had an experience that was consistent, or vision that was consistent with some religion, that still doesn't tell us whether or not that religion's true.
Okay. The next thing, I agree with you. The next thing I wanted to get to was how conscious, right? So I feel like conscious beyond our emotions and our physical state is not a real thing. Does that make sense?
So far, yeah. You're talking about consciousness. I understand. Is there a question?
So I think that we should believe in those things as things that are beyond what science says that they are. In order to
believe in what things?
Our emotions as coming from someplace else than our brain.
Okay. So you think that we should believe that our emotions come from something other than our brains? What are the potential candidate explanations, and why would we not attribute it to the brain? Because as far as I'm aware, all the available evidence shows that my brain is the thing that produces my emotions. And this is fungible and manipulated. You can manipulate this by electric probes in the brain to make you feel certain things. So what's your reason for thinking that we should just disregard that and believe that there's something beyond our brain?
Because I feel like that's what has pushed a lot of societies to even make communities and things like that in the past. So I think it's like, I believe in belief, I guess.
I want to just clarify you for a second so that we don't get you wrong. Are you making the claim that emotions are generated outside of the brain and we experience them from some source other than the neural networks inside of our brain and inside of our skull? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm saying that they could possibly come from someplace else and it's manifested in our brains.
But your reason for saying that, based on what you said a moment ago, is that you believe in the power of belief. You believe that if people believe that their emotions comes from outside of them, that would be an inspiring thing for people, right?
Yes.
It's not inspiring for me at all. I mean, it might inspire me to try to find out whether or not it's true. But at the end of the day... Well,
yeah, my question would be, why do you think that?
Because I think that you don't feel that way, that it's inspiring, because you know so much about science. But most people aren't interested in like studying a lot. So there's something that's like an outer source for other people.
Well, emotions could come from outside the brain. It's possible, but how would we determine that is what my question is. Like, how would we actually create a body of evidence to determine whether or not that was true?
I don't think we can. I just think that it's beneficial for us to believe that it is something outside.
So would you be okay then with encouraging beliefs that you knew weren't true just because you felt they were beneficial to people?
In this sense, yeah, but can you give an example where that would be problematic?
I can't give an example where it wouldn't be problematic, because whatever the truth is, whatever it is that people... So you're basically saying that you're willing to believe something irrespective of the evidence for it, and instead basing your belief based on the utility of the outcome that you see. But the thing is, if you inspire people with a lie, why couldn't you inspire them with the truth? Because let's say, I've joked before that prayer works, because if you're in a cave-in and your oxygen is limited, if you pray and you believe in prayer, that will calm you down, you'll use less oxygen, you'll increase the amount of time that you have to be rescued. So therefore, the act of praying indirectly leads to an increase in the likelihood that you're going to be rescued. Now, if you understand that that's the case, then you don't need the prayer part. You can just calmly use less oxygen. Now, maybe that humans are fundamentally incapable of doing that. That there may be a scenario where they need the comforting and compelling lie, where they need the parent sitting there saying, go for it, you can do whatever you want, which is a lie that parents tell their kid all the, you can grow up to be anything you want. No, you can't. It's just not realistic. What they're saying is, we don't know what you're going to grow up to be, and we're going to encourage you to keep trying everything you can so you can find what works best for you. That is not a lie. To say that we should encourage people to think that emotions come from outside their brain when all the evidence is to the contrary, and your reason is because people don't know enough about science, why isn't the solution teach them more about science?
Because I don't think enough people trust science as something that liable for and like for every generation of humans. Like I don't think that everyone is gonna buy science just because people don't like believing in things that are factual.
Well, let's take the word science out of it and just replace it with truth, right? Or accuracy. I'm interested to know, what is your opinion when it comes to how much of our day-to-day understanding of ourselves and the reality and the context with which we move in should be as close to the factual truth as it can be? Are you making a case that it's better to live in a world of myth and mythology regardless of the underlying like fundamental like objective truth underneath it? I'm just trying to get a wrestle of like, if we can take science out of the picture and just say we're talking about what is and is not true, you know, does the sun go to sleep at night, that kind of thing. Like how much about the world in which we operate is it important for you to feel is our understanding of it is as close to the objective truth as possible?
I feel like in the most basic form, I'm trying to say that yes, the universe just moves. That's all that we can observe, is that the universe just moves, but it makes you want to live. Well, makes most people want to live knowing that there's a reason, like there's something that the universe is trying to get to, like a goal, you know.
But there's no evidence that the universe has a goal. And if you believe that that's the case and you're wrong, haven't you wasted all that time and effort believing something that's not true?
I suppose so. That makes sense.
I mean, wouldn't you also want to know the very claim you just made was true or false?
Yeah, it's like everything you've said, and I'm trying to to pay close attention. You keep saying, I feel like. And so you're basically using what limited data you might have. I don't know if you've done any research in this area into how people aren't keen with science. I think generally people are fine with science until the findings of science conflict with something that they really, really like. And then their brain gets in this really confused state and they're going to have to deal with it. But if you are just saying, hey, this is, I feel like, I want to know. I don't, not trying to be a dick, but I don't care what you feel like. I don't care what your suspicions are about this. What I care about is what the data show. And, you know, if it were the case that, and actually I'll have to say this really carefully. If it were the case that the only way to convince people to enjoy a decent, productive life was to give them some fundamental lie, I'm still not sure that I could support giving them the fundamental lie.
Why is that?
Because I value the truth. Nobody's been able to demonstrate to me that there is something wrong with the truth. Like, if I'm planning out how I'm going to live my next year, and I'm convinced that God has a plan for me and I'm going to be coming into a lot of money, is that a wise thing? Is that a wise way for me to plan my year? I don't think so.
Well, I do know some people who do that, and it turns out right. But I guess it's not the most wise way.
Okay, some people it may turn out right, and some people it's not. So,
yeah. And there's also a meta level of this. I mean, I can't help but do that, and it may be like a waste of time to say it. But you're making a claim that it. I mean, you may not be making this claim, but we're sort of just having a little chit chat about it, which is that there may be cases in which it's more beneficial, whatever that means, to believe in a lie than it is to believe in the truth. But that claim itself is something that would need to be tested, right? Like to find out whether or not that claim itself is true, we'd have to test it using some sort of epistemological framework. And so what is the best framework to use to test that? And I would assume, you know, scientific method is one that's pretty good. There are others, but at some point it's turtles all the way down. So we have to like dig our heels in and say, how do we decide, how do we figure out even this very claim itself that maybe lies are good sometimes? How do we determine that? And the only way I know that would really reliably give you evidence would be to toss it into the institution of science and see what turns out.
Let me ask this, Jacob, if I can, because this might clear it up. If you had someone who you loved who was convinced that they had a lucky rabbit's foot that would always protect them, are you okay with them believing that?
Yes, I am.
And are you still okay with them believing that, even if they're if them being convinced that they had a lucky rabbit's foot that would protect them leads to them closing their eyes, clutching the rabbit's foot, and walking across a busy highway? Are you still okay with them believing that?
Okay, I see what you're saying. No. Okay.
Yeah. And while, you know, it's fine for people to believe all kinds of untrue and batshit things when they're never going to be put to the test, but all of a sudden when the rubber meets the road or when you're trying to cross a busy street, now people do care about science. And people care about science quite often when they are faced with health decisions, when they are faced with any sort of thing. We'll trust the data when our life's on the line.
Right. But I don't think there's anything wrong with believing in a higher power, though. I think that the problem is that it's that most religions believe in an unchanging higher power. Like, that's why I'm pantheist, because the universe is always moving. And I feel like we should all have some type of respect or like some type of belief that the universe is aspiring to something.
I hear you. But if you're a pantheist, and the universe isn't actually directing it, like there's no consciousness to the universe that's directing anything, what does your pantheistic view of God do for your life or for anybody's life, if you just believe the universe is God?
Well, it makes me respect everything around me.
Why? The fact that a universe is God doesn't mean that anything is deserving of respect. Doesn't mean that you should behave in a particular way. It doesn't mean you should make a decision. You know, I could say right now, I'm absolutely convinced that the universe is a conscious agent, and it tells you nothing at all about what that agent thinks about how I should live my life.
Okay, that's true.
So does your view of pantheism tell you anything about how you should live your life?
Not really, but there.
What good is it?
I pick my view based on what other pantheistic views in religion have, like how people think that there are spirits, how people think that there are spirits inside of the sun or inside trees and things like that. They took well care of those things. Like, they took well care of those trees because they had that belief. And I think, like, with the absence of science, if everyone believed that, then the world would still be intact.
Do you think that if people who don't believe in pantheism wouldn't take care of trees?
I don't think that they would. No, I don't, because I don't think that they would have a reason to, I guess.
You don't think that understanding how nature works and how trees are essential to keeping us alive, you don't think that that's sufficient reason?
Well, yeah, that is. But outside of that, people who aren't interested in that, I think they should all be pantheists for the reason that I'm saying. Like, you get me?
Well, I couldn't possibly be a pantheist until you were actually able to convince me that pantheism was true, because I don't believe things just because they might be useful. I will only believe things when I'm convinced that they're likely to be true.
Well, yeah, I mean, but you weren't always like that.
Correct. I used to believe things for really bad reasons, and now I prefer to have good reasons. And so I'm saying, if pantheism is something that you're going to advocate for, you'd need to have a really good reason for pantheism. And just saying, oh, I suspect that pantheistic people are going to be nicer to the planet, really isn't going to cut it.
Okay. Well, I'll study on that, I guess.
All right.
But thank you. Thank you for...
Do please take care of trees. That's really cool.
I'm a fan of taking care of trees, but I'm also a woodworker, and that puts me in a really unusual position.
Yeah, I have friends who work for the forestry department here in my state, and they love trees.
Yeah. All right. We've got Arthur somewhere in Europe. You are on with David and Matt. How are you?
Oh, hello. I'm glad to be on your show. Hello. How are you? So I want to somehow introduce a cliche conversation, if that's not a big deal. A general conversation, actually, if you don't mind.
We'll try.
It's actually a question about assumptions. Do you think it's wrong if someone would believe in something with having zero evidence for it? Do you think that that's a problem?
Generally, yes, but it would depend on what it is, because there are certain things that we can't necessarily have evidence for, but we have pragmatic reasons why we need to accept them, the presuppositions.
Yeah. And I'm not entirely sure you can believe anything with zero evidence. There has to be some material basis inside of the brain to reach an assumption of any kind.
It'd just be bad evidence in some cases. Like, you know, you can say, hey, I believe my mom loves me, and I don't have any evidence of this. Really? You don't have any evidence of that? Oh, okay, well, let me change it from my mom to something else. And you go down to, what David's essentially talking about is that, in my view, and he can correct me if I get this wrong, every belief that you hold, every time you are convinced that X is likely true, you have become convinced for some reason. And it could be good reasons, and it could be bad reason. And it's just like, you could consider that evidence. And what's happening is your standards of evidence are so low that you're being convinced by bad evidence or by incomplete evidence. But I don't know that, I'm not sure you could believe something in the absence of any evidence.
There's good research to this. And I'll let the caller speak. I just want to add this. One of the fundamental studies in neuroscience was done by Blakemore and Cooper in the 1970s. And I know this is going to be icky and creepy, but the 1970s science was icky and creepy. So just let's give them a pass on this. They raised a group of cats in an environment that had no horizontal lines, just like it was really meticulously put together. They were raised in this cylinder, and they had a cone on their head, and they spent the first basically month and a half of their lives in an environment with no horizontal lines. And then they introduced them into an environment that they would like play with them with a stick. And when it was vertical, they would follow it. When they turned it horizontal, it disappeared. It completely evaporated from reality altogether. They also would take a wall that was covered in vertical lines and push it toward them, and they would like back away from it. But if it had horizontal lines on it, it would go, and then eventually smash them in the face. But for their first like experiences with things that were horizontal, they did not see it at all. It did not exist in their at all in reality, because their brain had not been exposed to horizontal things, and it had not wired up appropriately to be able to predict it and also put it into context. Now, it didn't take very long for those cats to start to be able to make sense of the world with horizontal included. But it's an example of, they had zero evidence that horizontal existed, and so therefore it did not appear to them until it did. So I don't think it's actually possible for a nervous system to make an assumption about anything with zero evidence. It's always going to come from some sort of prior experience that they've had with that thing, or some prior probability that's been built up over time by experience.
And one quick example is, somebody tells me their name is Pete. I have no evidence of this, but what the evidence that I'm going to use is that I've met lots of people, and people generally tend to tell me the name that they prefer to be referred to as. And so I have evidence from the surrounding world that we just kind of ignore. I'm actually doing a video about this week, but go ahead.
That was really good. That is a philosophical like conundrum that that's good.
So would you say that generally as human species, is it good for humanity to assume things, or is it wrong? What do you think? Because I think
it's generally unwise for us to assume any more than is necessary to assume. For the things that we can't, anything that we can't demonstrate, there may be presuppositions like identity, non-contradiction, excluded middle. We can't prove logic without using logic. We can't disprove logic without using logic. And so those become presuppositions. But when you're talking about facts of reality that can be tested, that can have evidence for them, that don't require presupposition, then I would say, generally speaking, it's a mistake to accept those things without sufficient evidence.
And, you know, as long as you're making, I talk to scientists all the time, and we always will have it's like a safe word almost. We say, right now we're going to start speculating, which means, you know, we're going to make some assumptions based off of what we know, and we're going to make some speculate on things we don't know. So as long as you're labeling what you're doing as, I am currently in an assumptive frame, I'm currently speculating, that's science itself. Science has to do that. And when you use the word, but I am interested, you say the word wrong, like, what do you mean by wrong?
For instance, say belief in a God, is that wrong?
What do you mean by wrong?
Well, a God doesn't exist. That would be the wrong on the statement.
When you say wrong, and this is important, do you mean factually incorrect or morally incorrect?
Not morally.
Okay. So you just mean factually incorrect. Okay.
That's the thing, though, is that if the God proposition is unfalsifiable, then you can't use your definition of wrong. Because if somebody believes in a God and the God is unfalsifiable, there's no way to show that God doesn't exist, then they're not wrong because in your sense of they are now in contradiction with the fact or the actual state of affairs. And if that's the case and it's unfalsifiable, I would say that I would prefer using a different word, which is your belief warranted? Is it justified by evidence and argument sort of thing? And if it's not, then the word I'd prefer is irrational, unreasonable, whatever, not wrong, because wrong, if you're going to define wrong as they believe something that is not true, then for everything that you can't prove isn't true, you have to just kind of let them keep on going and say they're on good ground.
Yeah, wrong's a really charged word, because like if we were to like move it to the discussion of is there intelligent life out there other than human beings on another planet, right? You know, we have a framework for like trying to speculate about that. And so wrong is such a gigantic black and white 0 or 100 kind of term. I agree with Matt that we it's better to use a different terminology, or at least like really clarify what we mean as to, is it more about how much confidence you have in that claim, you know, and I don't really like the idea of blanketly saying something is right or wrong.
Yeah, it's tough to even get general, but continue, Arthur. I'm sorry.
No, that's all. That's all I wanted to ask, actually.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. Hopefully it was helpful or at least sparked something interesting to discuss.
Thank you for being so polite, too.
Yeah. This one ties into this. We've got Josiah in California. You're on with David and Matt. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure.
Same.
So I think unless you've changed questions, your question kind of ties into what we were just talking about. So please go ahead and tell us what you're thinking.
Yeah, I just noticed that this might get kind of deep. I mean, so I was halfway listening to what you guys were talking about from the very beginning, but I was actually reading some scripture while I was waiting. So I was able to kind of go into, I was able to hear parts of what everyone was saying.
Hey, so do me a favor, Josiah, put the scripture down. I'm having fun with you.
Yeah, I want to preface everything. because the reason I said that is because, so I was planning on giving a point by point like everyone else.
Yeah.
But I decided that's not what I'm going to do. So, because I think it's kind of unfair because you guys aren't coming at people with your points. They're coming at you with the points that they've already prepared answers to. So I think it'd be better to just go back and forth with our own instinctive abilities, you know?
I tell you what, instead of just giving us a preamble and a description of what's going to happen, let's just do it. Say whatever it is you're thinking and we'll dig in.
Jump in. Yeah, ask a question, make a statement.
Okay, so I noticed that when I look at the evidence given for anything, like evidence given for aliens or paranormal or evolution or the Big Bang, I noticed there's always evidence, obviously, or else people wouldn't believe these things. The only thing I have curiosity about is how do we know we're interpreting the evidence in the best way? And everyone thinks they're interpreting the evidence in the best way they can, but
It reminds me of one of my favorite questions, Josiah, which is, what's it feel like to be wrong?
Yeah,
it feels exactly like being right if you haven't discovered that you're wrong.
For sure. And I don't mean to roll over what you're saying, Josiah. Please do. I'll allow you to continue. But that's a great question. I mean, that is the question.
Yeah.
That's why we're like having this conversation. Like, because people keep asking that question and trying to solve it. Like,
it's the reason the philosophers have developed thoughts on epistemology, and it's the reason that scientists are doing what they're doing the way they're doing it.
And honestly, you know, maybe there's a better way than science. We don't know yet. It's the best way we've done so far. And that's, you know, it seems to be working pretty well. It got us to the moon, if you believe that. But it definitely got us to have this conversation, which involves a lot of technological innovations that required us to ask that question over and over again. So there are all sorts of ways to try to figure out if the evidence before us is evidence for X, Y, or Z. And I think that's a fantastic question to ask. I don't think you're off base. Do you have more to add?
Well, but just before that, I also don't think that it's nearly as difficult as some people would like to think it is, because where we tend to ask this sort of question is in things that is with regard to things that aren't particularly well understood, like, or that affect us personally. So how many of us have spent any time thinking about whether or not the evidence for our current understanding of electricity is accurate as we're sitting here with lights surrounding me, cameras pointed at me, broadcasting over the internet to people on cellular devices, et cetera. All of this ties into our understanding of electricity, everything right down to the integrated circuits in your devices. And yet we don't sit around going, hey, I wonder if we're really right to believe this evidence. And that's because the results of it are so overwhelming. You're just, I mean, to go back to commercials from when I was a kid, you're soaking in it. You are soaking in science all the time, and you just don't notice it until it comes up with something that is in conflict with a belief you have or that seems to be out of shape with reality as you understand it. And what we have to do then is go and look and see if our previous understanding is more in line with the facts and the data and the methods than our new potential understanding.
Yeah, yeah. It's like all the evidence. I mean, it's important to use language like this, I think, not just in science, but in just like these kind of conversations. You know, the evidence collected so far suggests this conclusion is more likely than the alternatives. And that's really just how it works. And you're always open to getting more evidence and reaching different conclusions as long as you keep playing that game by the rules that we've established. And you know, there are the paradigm shifts that have taken place in every scientific discipline have usually taken place from a model was built up over time based off the evidence and the conclusions that seem to you can draw from it. And then when new tools were made available or new evidence was collected, if it seemed like it started to become anomalous with the model we had put forth, we changed the model. And you're getting to live in a time period where we've done that a whole lot. So we've started to really coalesce around some ideas that seem to be pretty good, but we're always open to changing them.
I'm wondering, Josiah, if there's a particular thing that, like an example where you think, oh, here's a piece of evidence and it can be so widely or so the interpretations of the evidence can be so wildly different that it's a problem.
If I had to think of one that I think that you might be willing to consider, it would be like evolution. I think a lot of the times there's evidence presented on both sides of the scientific debate. And oftentimes
Josiah, there is no scientific debate on evolution. Evolution is a fact, an observed fact. And the theory of evolution by means of natural selection is the model that Darwin proposed to best explain that fact. And we have continued to improve on it. But there's not scientific debate about whether or not evolution happened.
Well, that's the thing. I know evolution happens to a degree. The evolution that is observable, we have definitions like, you know, adaptations and stuff like that. And the great disagreement is over, do those adaptations lead to such huge things over time? So I guess, like, for example,
There isn't disagreement in the scientific community. There's a disagreement between certain proponents of religious models that aren't scientific and science. Because science doesn't say, hey, we have cracked and understood everything that leads to diverse species, and we've explained it all. That's not it at all. What's happening and what you're kind of advocating for is in the gaps in our knowledge, religionists try to stick their God in there. Like we know evolution happens, but maybe it's not enough to lead to humans. And therefore now we need a God for this, except that none of that has been demonstrated scientifically. It is antithetical to the understanding of evolution. And what's happening here is somebody saying, ah, you don't know everything, but I've got a friend who does. And my friend is Jesus or God or Allah or whatever. That's not the way science works. So just have the fact that there are people who don't accept that science is incomplete and tentative doesn't mean that their alternative explanations for the gaps in our knowledge rise to the level of science. They don't rise to the level of toilet paper, in my view, but that's kind of like a personal take on my part.
I would really like to present at least an example of what I'm talking about.
Okay,
please do.
I think in every branch of science, there's a way that the Bible answers it to a degree. Just like when, I'm just going to break it down to the simplest.
Are you going to give us an example about evolution, or are you going to do a sermon about the Bible?
No. This is about what I notice between both paradigms. So I notice everyone interprets the science based on their paradigm. Most people, at least. Scientists will say, well, we already know that the geologic column represents billions of years. So whenever they're presented with like radiometric dating or carbon dating, there's so many examples when the dating methods will contradict the paradigm, but they toss it out. And there are even evolution scientists that acknowledge that. They say if it goes against what we believe, we just toss it out. And we
No, that's not what happens. That's what you've been told happens by creationists. That's not actually what happens.
And the scientific discourse is, I mean, scientists are never stop arguing with each other. Every paper that comes out, there's a period of time where it gets torn to shreds by everybody's peers. And it sometimes can take 5 years for just a 2 or 3 page paper to like make it through that process. And there are people who, in their siloed field, if something comes along that's incredibly anomalous to something that seems to be established over, decades of research, there will be an immediate pushback to say, okay, well, you need to really make a case for this. But there's never a case. It can get stuck in that pipeline for a while, but it always makes it to the end of that pipeline so far.
But even when we find anomalies, it's not just like, oh, that doesn't fit, so we're going to throw it out willy-nilly.
It
is a recognition of the statistical likelihood of things that are anomalous. And what's incredibly frustrating for me is that you, as I don't know you, Josiah, but you seem like a nice person who's genuinely interested in finding out what the truth is. You've been sold a bill of goods about how science works, and that's not how science works. Meanwhile, the people who are selling you this bill of goods, the creationists, have done zero science to demonstrate evidence towards their proposed solution. So all you can do, I mean all that the creationists can do, and you by proxy once you do this, is sit here and go, here's a problem in science. Congratulations. None of us said science was perfect, and science doesn't make proclamations about truth. Science doesn't say this is true. Science always presents tentative conclusions and models that are the best explanation of the available facts. In the entire history of the world, the number of times that science has been proven wrong has always been tied to science proving science wrong. At no point in history has any religion proved science wrong. At no point in history has any religion presented scientifically valid evidence of their supernatural claims.
Okay. You said that there's when a evolution scientist provides proof, creationists don't do anything to counter that, or they don't do anything that's sufficient enough.
No, that's not what I said. I don't know if you're busy reading a sermon in the middle of this or not, but I didn't talk about evolution scientists. I talk about science and scientists. And what I said was that the scientists are actually doing science and the creationists are not. It's not like they've presented scientific findings that shows there is a creator or a supernatural realm.
I think if you lend integrity to an event that happened to me, I could do my best, but I'm okay.
Josiah, let's do this because there's a bunch of other callers waiting. Tell us the event that happened to you that you think somehow demonstrates creationism.
No, not creationism.
Oh, okay. What are we talking about then?
Your statement was the Bible and religion has never brought forth any evidence to prove in the spirit supernatural. That's what you said.
There is not sufficient evidence to warrant the belief or acceptance of any supernatural proposition is my position.
Okay. Like I said, I have an experience that I could get into if you...
Just tell me the experience. But here's the thing. It's going to be a waste of time. Because the dirty little secret, and I will let you tell your story, but the dirty little secret is that it is not currently possible to demonstrate that the supernatural exists or that the supernatural interacts with reality. And if it had happened, it's not going to happen from an anecdote on a Call an Atheist show. It's going to be a Nobel fucking prize is what it's going to be. But tell us your story.
Okay. Can I say two things?
Please do. Just make a statement. Go for it.
Okay. So my first point is, I know you're more interested in the science of it. So before I get to my experience, there's this guy, I can't find his name. He's a scientist. He's a creationist though. His first name is Kevin. And he, he's also a paleontologist, and he, I think it was in Montana, he uncovered with a couple of his teammates, he uncovered Triceratops that was just a, like less a couple feet under the ground. And the climate in that area is fluctuates all the time. So hot, cold, hot, cold. And his rebuttal to millions of years and dinosaur tissue surviving for millions of years is he found Triceratops soft tissue, and there's a video of the soft tissue being used and stuff like that. So there was a woman named Mary Schweitzer that discovered.
Are we getting to your story, or are you just going to give me more glurge to Google?
Well, no, this is something that I want you to look up and you can actually verify for yourself.
If you don't think we've... Right. So have you ever gone to talkorigins.org and maybe looked at the Index to Creationist Claims where they actually address pretty much every one of these that comes up all the time? I don't need you telling me other people's stories. You had a story of what happened to you that was going to prove the supernatural. That's what I care about.
Okay. So we're not going to finish that. Okay.
What good does it do for you to come in and talk about something that you don't understand and don't know about, can't even remember the person's name, and I don't understand and don't know about, and nobody in the scientific community seems to think that finding one anomaly, or even if it were an anomaly, undermines the mountains of evidence for evolution. It's like, can you just tell us whatever story it is that you think confirms the supernatural, because that's why I let you stay, so let's do it.
Okay, well, thank you. Appreciate it. This experience, I hate to drag this on, but I can't just tell you the experience because you're...
You could if you'd stop with a fucking preamble and just get to the point.
Okay.
Thanks.
I had a dream that it started, I was here on the earth. Now, dreams are not evidence to most people, especially atheists, but just wait until I give you the explanation. I'll spoil it. I saw something in my dream that I knew nothing about. I saw a man in my dream, and I actually saw him in real life after the fact. And every detail of the dream had to do with this man. And
okay.
I think that's just...
Let me jump in to make this last shorter. You had a dream, and the details of the dream, some of the details of the dream seemed to be to match up with details of reality outside of the dream afterward. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Have you ever had a dream where that didn't happen?
Funny, yeah.
Okay. And the details of the dream that took place outside of the dream, are those sort of details that are common to reality in general? Like, you know, you didn't see a kraken or the sun explode or anything. You saw a person with the general features of a person.
Yes. Not only did I see this person's face, but I did not know the person from anyone on the earth. Yeah. It's a stranger to me.
I've had dreams like that. I've had dreams where people in my dreams resemble people in the real world. I'm trying to figure out what are you making. It feels like you're making the leap that you may have foreseen that person somehow.
Oh, there were so many more things to the dream. And that's the part that was very compelling to me. I'd just like you to hear it. Even if you don't accept it, I just think it's worth hearing.
So one of the things that we've seen, or that is strongly evidenced, is I can have a dream about somebody. And then when I meet somebody later, I can say, that's the person that I dreamt about, even if it wasn't, even if they don't necessarily look alike, and my brain will mold the two to fit together. How did you eliminate that possible explanation that your brain was merely stitching together a connection that isn't even necessarily there? How did you rule that out?
Yeah, and just to clarify, you know, you don't have the dream to compare it to, like two photographs to put side by side, and there are psychological studies where we have had that, where people have been shown a photograph of someone and then shown a photograph. The photograph is actually, they actually had people rate the photograph and say, which one of these two people do you find more attractive? And then they say, well, here is, it's A, not B. And then they say, okay. And they hand them the photograph and say, tell me why. But the photograph they hand is actually of the person they did not choose. It's been blown up a little bit larger. And people will dutifully describe every detail that they'll describe the details of the person that they originally found more attractive than the other. So without the side-by-side comparison, we do have the tendency to do what Matt just described.
The other issue with this is, first of all, you said, dreams aren't evidence, especially to atheists. I don't know what the especially to atheists means, because I know some atheists who just love themselves some dreams and love themselves some woo and super. So it's not just atheists, but not only could you have a dream and then afterwards your brain can massage details to meet, you know, to make those two seem like a connection. But let's give you completely the benefit of the doubt, Josiah. Let's say that I am now convinced that you had a dream about a person and the details about that dream were so vivid and so accurate that the instant you met that person, it was clear to you, this is exactly the person you've dreamed about, even though you've never met them in real life. How can that be used as evidence for supernatural God? Because the fact that you experienced something is independent from how or why you experienced it. And so how could you possibly reach the conclusion that the best explanation is that there's some sort of supernatural intervention here that gave you a premonition in a dream?
I would love to explain everything, if for nothing else, just for you guys to sit on this and think about it later if it ends up being interesting to you.
I asked the question.
Oh, sorry. How is that? I'm sorry. I didn't...
Even if I grant everything you say, you had a dream about a person and then you met this person afterwards and you never met him before. And even if I accepted that all of that is true, how is that evidence that the best explanation is some sort of supernatural intervention to give you a premonition in a dream?
The reason it would be evidence, I guess, is because if you heard the dream, you would know that it's not even possible for this to occur outside of...
No, sir. No, sir. No, sir. No, sir. You don't get to say there couldn't be any other explanation. That's a fallacy. You don't get to assert what is or isn't possible because you haven't demonstrated it. I appreciate the fact that you had an experience that you found personally compelling because you can't think of any other explanation, but that doesn't mean that you are warranted or justified in leaping to the conclusion that there must be some sort of supernatural intervention. That's just not the way reasoning works if you care about whether or not your beliefs are true. If you don't care about whether or not your beliefs are true, then yeah, just go with whatever you suspect is the truth, but that's not going to fly.
I'd still like to give my best answer for the question.
I'd love it. I've asked several times the question, haven't got an answer. So what's the answer?
So the evidence, we look at evidence as scientific evidence that we can observe, demonstrate, record, everything like that. But I'm saying, is it possible that if this is true, which we can't prove with the scientific method, would that make it possible for another method to exist that we don't know about? And I know that's a leap. I know that's huge,
okay. You've gone from you are convinced of X, and then when we point out the various problems with it, now what you're saying is it possible that there's some other way of knowing? Well, when you find another way of knowing and demonstrate its reliability and show that its reliability is not only superior to the scientific methods and the critical thinking and the examination process that we currently have now, but that it also, in addition to being superior, provides evidence of the supernatural, that's the point at which your conclusion is warranted. Until then, you had a dream, you had an experience, and you're just going, hey, is it possible that there's something here? Well, I don't know. That's your job to demonstrate that it's possible.
Yeah, I'm with you. Know, it's okay to say, is it possible? Well, maybe. Yeah, it could be. We need a method by which to determine that is what we're, you know, there has to be some way that we have to get to that answer. And we have to use some sort of method to come to the conclusion.
What's worse in some cases, sorry, David.
No,
it's popped right in my head, is that people will use this to believe in a God. And it's what it is a slippery slope. Here's something I can't explain. It could be explained if there was a God who has given me a dream. Therefore, I'm going to go ahead and believe there's a God that gave me this dream, because that actually is a sufficient explanation, but it's not necessarily the necessary and sufficient explanation.
Right. I mean,
and so the danger in accepting that you've experienced something supernatural is that it opens the floodgates to you not being able to determine whether or not anything you experience is supernatural. Maybe, is it possible that there's a million supernatural beings and that one of them's just messing with you and one of them gives you dreams and one of them steals socks out of the dryer?
Yeah, there are thousands of possible explanations, maybe millions, maybe an infinite number. So we have to gather evidence and then see which of those possibilities has the most supporting evidence, and then we can start trying to draw conclusions from it. So until you can create a framework for doing that, we're just kind of, you know, farting around with it is what we're all.
I'm going to give you the last word here in just a second, Josiah. But what it says right here in your initial comment is, when it comes to evidence, different people interpret it differently. Who is right? And what you're doing is not so much a who is right, but you're doing this can't be proven wrong, so I'm okay and I'm comfortable going with it until such time as it goes wrong. But if your position is unfalsifiable, A, it's not scientific, and B, you should not believe it.
Okay. Now, while I do appreciate you saying let's give you the benefit of the doubt, we'll acknowledge that the dream happened, whatever, and everything you said came true in real life. The thing is, until you hear the dream, I think it's not fair to say, how do we know this doesn't require a superior method? Why can't the method be not superior, but equivalent?
You don't have a method, Josiah. You don't have a method. You have the hope that there's possibly a method. When you have a method, call me back.
The thing is, let's say you were to hear a dream. I'm not going to tell you the dream unless you actually want to hear it.
I asked you to tell me the dream 20 minutes ago. But I got to move on to other callers soon. So go ahead and get your last thoughts in.
Yeah, I'll just tell you the dream because that's what I've been wanting to do since a while. The dream started off, I appeared on this earth, which the Bible says is perishable. And I know you don't want me to preach, but I'm giving context to why my dream.
Just stick to the dream, man.
Just tell me the fucking dream.
Okay. I appeared on this earth. I started turning to my side and I made a 360 turn. When I made my way back to where I started, I appeared in a very beautiful place. There were a bunch of giant trees. Now, this is just a dream. I don't think about my dreams as being something greater than just a dream. But I ran, when I arrived to this new place, I ran directly in a straight line. And on my left, there was a trench. And across that trench, it was blurry. I could not see what was there. So I ran in a straight line parallel with this trench, very deep trench. And when I turned back around to where I started, I saw a man at my left who had a man dressed in a black suit, and he had very specific face. I was like focused in on his face for a brief few seconds. Then there was a black horse in front of him. Now this man and the horse were matching colors. They had black colors. Now
were the trees cherry trees? Because I've heard this song. Big black horse and cherry tree?
No, I don't know what trees they were. They were just really big trees that extended their leaves really far. Now, this is very interesting if you hear the whole thing, because I find it compelling, whether you're an atheist or not.
How could you find it compelling whether you're an atheist or not if you're not an atheist? Just tell me the story.
I said, okay. He ducked down, and he pointed his finger up in the air and started spinning his hand in a circle. As he spun his hand in a circle, a horse began to follow the movements of his hand and obey his every little tricks that he would do. Then when the man stood up, the horse stood up and kept spinning as the man kept signaling. And when the man ducked back down, the horse kept spinning while being ducked down close to the ground. And when the man stuck his palm out, the horse stopped. Now, this needs to be heard in its entirety in detail in order for you to understand why I find it compelling. When I saw what I was looking at, something caught my eye. Deep in the forest of these trees, there was a white horse running in the distance from the left to the right. And he was running very fast. And I was like, where is this horse going? What is this horse doing? He stopped. The horse ran to my right and stopped exactly where I appeared in that place. Then he ran directly towards me and I stuck my hand out and he stopped.
How long is this dream?
It's probably long, but it's worth hearing.
Then we're moving on. Learn how to tell a story. Call me back when you get some kind of sound way to test this, because so far you've told me that you appeared on Earth, turned sideways, and after a 360-degree turn, you appeared in a beautiful place with trees, ran in a straight line with a trench on your left, turned back around. There was a man on your left. There was a black who was wearing a black suit with a very specific face and a black horse, and then ducked down and pointed up, spun his hand in a circle. None of that is relevant to anything.
It is, but you haven't...
No, when you met this man, was there a horse anywhere near you?
No.
Yeah, goodbye.
The dream needs to speak for itself.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. Then the dream can fucking call me. That is, I'm not wasting every viewer's time on a meandering, wandering dream story that can't possibly demonstrate the very thing that you're trying to demonstrate.
It was a beautiful dream, though.
It was pretty.
But I honestly did want to know where he was going with it, but I don't know if we have the time to get there. So
yeah, I got 20 minutes left in the show, and there's a half a dozen callers waiting, and I don't want to be rude to all of them just so this guy, because I've had people do this before where they were just building up to a joke.
Okay.
And yeah. So one of the things is that people are like, oh, you didn't let them finish. Oh, my gosh. Somebody please put a time on that call to see how many times we asked for this and everything else. The deal here is that this is a live call-in show. It's not like a debate. You watch me in a debate. I've got one debate opponent that I'm going to be engaging with in front of an audience. Here, we have people on hold. Please try to remember that if I'm ready to move on, it's because there's people been on hold for an hour and some change who might have something that's more productive. And that person, Josiah, can maybe jot down the salient details of that dream and come up with a method to show why this dream and what happened after it, which evidently didn't involve a horse, what the relevance there is. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, let's imagine that he had this wonderful prophetic dream that told him that to meet this person, and that person said, hey, the earth's going to shut down because of COVID. And he heard this back in October of last year. That's all really interesting, and I have no idea what a potential explanation for it would be. I have no idea what a potential explanation for it would be, and neither does Josiah. Josiah instead fails to recognize that he doesn't have an explanation and instead is convinced that he does, that the best explanation for this is, oh, this was a message that was given to me. Hmm. And I can't get there, but we got a Dan in Romania. You're on with Matt and David.
Romania.
Hello, David. Hello, Matt. Hi. Yeah, I just want to begin by saying hi and hope you and your loved ones are doing fine.
Well, thank you very much. Okay. Same for you.
Thank you. I'll try to be brief. In essence, my question is regarding St. Paul, or Paul of Tarsus, Paul the Apostle.
Sure.
And it's pretty simply, why wouldn't we take for granted or believe the Christian narrative, especially the one of Paul, who most historians and scholars agree that, he wrote the earliest letters and manuscripts that are included in the Bible and so on. Why would we basically believe that Paul and the apostles are, either lying or somehow mass hallucinating or so on? Why wouldn't we simply take them for granted and, take the story that they told?
So first of all, you don't have to be thinking that Paul was lying.
Agreed.
But you don't just, when somebody tells you that they've had an experience on a Damascus road with the risen savior of the world, you don't just take them at their word. Because if you do that, you're going to have to do that for anybody else who makes that claim. Otherwise, you're going to be on shaky footing. So while Paul has a potentially interesting story, there's no evidence for that beyond his, saying that it happened. It is inconsistent with how the way we understand the world to work, and therefore it needs more evidence than merely someone say so.
Yeah, and I'd only add, just take any of those claims and assume that someone today made those claims. Like, they started up a blog, or they got on YouTube and they made those claims. And just how would you respond to that?
Yeah, I would be very skeptic of that. But yeah. I guess the reason, I do agree with you, we would be in a position where we would have to take everyone for granted. But, maybe dipping, going to a more personal angle, so to say, I don't quite see, both Paul and the apostles were very, let's say, low people in the sense that they weren't someone in society. What I'm trying to say is I know this might sound gullible, but I don't quite see a reason why would they either make it up or either somehow they've mass hallucinated or it
just... Was David Koresh a significant person in the world before he started his cult?
I don't know who. Okay, I guess he's a cultist.
Yeah. So David Koresh led to the Waco tragedy, but just pick every other person that's ever been a founder or a contributor to any other religion. Because if you're going to accept the Christianity based on this thing, then how do you rule out other versions of this? When you ask what reason would they have, I'm fine with the notion that some of these people, first of all, we don't know who wrote the Gospels. We don't know, none of them are eyewitnesses. We don't have any way to verify it or investigate. I'm fine with the notion that they were honestly telling us what they thought was an accurate description of what happened, but that doesn't mean it was in fact actually accurate. Hmm. And what's troubling for me is, if it were accurate, then that means that there is a God who could instantly clear all this up and has failed to do so for thousands of years.
Yeah, okay. Well, I guess that's somehow moving the discussion to, like, why doesn't God just appear in front of us or so on?
Yeah, well, why not? I think did it for Paul.
I think you're asking a fair question. Don't get us wrong. Like how, you know, why would they make it up? And why should we take it for granted? Like, I mean, these are good questions. I mean, I don't see the problem in asking that question. But as Matt's pointed out, like, they are, at the end, they are just claims, and they have to be tested in some way if we're going to believe them. And at least that's the way I think about it. And I try to always assume a claim from history. If it was made today, how would I respond to it? And I would respond to it the same way I'm going to respond to this one.
Yeah. Okay. I got to move on, Dan, but I appreciate the call. And it is a good question. And the only answer that we can come up with is the one that I've already given, which is, I'm not saying these people are lying and I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm saying that their claims, merely the claims on their own, aren't sufficient to just warrant belief.
Okay, I see. Yeah, so thanks again for taking my call. And sure. Yeah.
Thank you.
Nice.
Thank you. Let's see where this one goes, because on the phone now is God.
Oh, I was hoping this would happen.
Of course you were hoping this would happen, but unfortunately we're operating from two circumspect and completely different paradigms. You, on the other hand, happen to believe that there are some paradigms which are true, which is demonstrably false. There are no paradigms which are true. You've always made the claim that if the Lord of the world should manifest himself and show up, you've thought about it long enough. Allow me to answer your questions. First and foremost, I'll falsify the notion that paradigms are real.
Hey, what number am I thinking of?
That's a false notion of omniscience. There is no knowledge you have. Subsequently, I'm not required to know your illusions. You have no knowledge. None.
But no. So I'm. What exactly is your characteristics as God? What can you do?
I'll explain. First, I'm going to finish the sentence that I made prior to this.
No, you're not. You're going to answer my question about what are your characteristics, God?
First, transrationality, being the capacity to operate above and beyond reason. Allow me to falsify reason now.
Yeah, no, you're done. If you've transcended reason, then you are well beyond us and a waste of our time. It would be a waste of your time for me to have a discussion about reason with you if you're now trans reason. I can't rise above reason. I'm completely locked in. I'm incapable of rising above reason. And that's why I hung up on you, because I didn't want to waste your time further. Because clearly you're so far beyond us, it's like disturbing.
But it's odd to me that God would make a claim that you can't make claims. Like, he's already entered into a logic loop, and that's beyond my human rationality to parse.
Well, we've got Aram in Australia who's saying that God isn't a being. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show. Thank you, Matt. How are you today?
I'm uber suspicious. So you say that God can be anything, and it. How did you determine that? Did you talk to God? Because I did just a minute ago.
We should get above the light. We could settle this really quick.
No, that's not how it goes, because I need to give you the edge as well, and we need to balance the system in a way that we can have a proper talk. So that's why I have to define the God in a standard way, so that we all can agree and make him a kind of falsifiable thing.
Okay.
No. You don't just define something in a way that's falsifiable in order to get agreement. God is what it is, irrespective. So what is God, and how do you know this? Hello?
And like that, poof.
He's gone. All right. Well, you know, we're cranking through these final few calls here in the last few minutes of the show. Let's see. We have Marie in Virginia. You're on with David and Matt. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you. How are y'all?
Not bad.
Not bad.
How can we help?
Well, there's a couple things, but I would like to start with, I don't believe that the Big Bang Theory and the accounts in a lot of the three major religions of the creation, I don't believe that they conflict with each other.
Okay. So you don't think that Genesis conflicts with what we understand about the world from science?
Specifically just the Big Bang Theory, you know, that theories are you know, proved. Oh, they say that it's proven because it's they've done many experiments with it.
That's not actually what they say. So you're kind of misunderstanding theory, but I get that this is the colloquial sense.
Okay.
A theory. So things start off, generally speaking, in science, you have a hypothesis that becomes a model and subjected to testing. And the theory is the graduation point. It's the point. There's nothing higher than a theory in science. And so this is what we've.
Thank you for explaining that better.
Sure. Yeah, it just means that all the evidence collected so far points in this direction. And but right. A lot of times in common parlance, the word guess or hypothesis, you know, gets mixed up with theory, but in science, it kind of follows the trajectory that Matt talked about.
But I just did a video about this the other day, or not too long ago, because the order of events as listed in Genesis chapter 1 does not match the order of events that we know to be true from science, or to be the best explanation for science. So Genesis.
I was actually hoping I was able to touch on that, because you said that that light was created after the vegetation.
No. The order of creation in Genesis is that there's a beginning, and then the earth is there and dark, and then light is created.
I don't know. And, you know, the different Bibles, they have different wordings, but from what I've seen, they're basically the same. Like when you compare them verse to verse, I could be wrong, but so in Genesis 1, chapter 1, verse 1, it says, in the beginning, when God created, but it, you know, we know about the little portions where it takes you to the bottom. Well, in my Bible, which is the one that I was given when I was younger, it's NRSV.
New Revised Standard Version.
God created? Yes. So okay. It takes me down to the bottom where it clarifies that. It says, or when God began to create, or in the beginning, God created. So
yes, it's trying to give you different understandings of the original Hebrew. But what I'm talking about is the order of events that are listed there.
Right.
And the order of events in Genesis chapter 2 has the earth. And then, verse 2, chapter 1, verse 2 has the earth. And then verse 3 has light. Now, that suggests that according to Genesis, the earth was created before light, which we know is not true.
Well, my Bible says the earth was a formless void and darkness covered the face of the deep while a wind from God, which brings me back down to the bottom. And it says it can be interpreted as while the spirit of God or while a mighty wind. So going back up there, it says, while a mighty wind swept over the face of the water, God said, let there be light. The actual earth wasn't formed like the.
Okay.
So later on.
So you're not. Wow. You're so quick to jump in. What verse in your Bible says the sun, moon and stars were created? Should be verse 7.
The sun, moon, and stars is actually down is.
They're not verse 7, but
down in 16.
Yeah, two great lights, and so the sun was created. Go back up to verse 12. What's it say in your Bible? And verse 11. Actually, just read verse 11 and 12.
We need to go in order. You know, we're talking about the order of things.
So I am going in order. What does verse 11 and 12 say in your Bible?
It says. Then God said, let the earth put forth vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees of every kind on earth that bear fruit with the seed.
Yeah. And that happened before the sun that's created in verse 16.
But not before light.
No. But so you think that there were plants? You think that there were plants on earth before there was a sun? But we know from science that the sun. No, stop interrupting.
What I believe. Okay.
I'm going to put your ass on hold. Thank you. The order of creation listed in Genesis does not match. It has plants on earth before the sun. But from science, we know that the sun existed before the earth existed. That is absolutely in conflict. How can you get around that?
Because I believe that light was created. So what was the light? What was the light?
So what you're saying is that you believe what the Bible says and not what science says, which is that the sun existed before the earth. Which is older, the sun or the earth? One question. It's really easy. Which is older, the sun or the earth?
The sun
The sun or the earth?
Yes. According to your Bible, which is older? According to you, which is older? And according to science, which is older?
Mm-hmm.
This isn't hard. You got your Bible open. You can read it. I just walked you through it.
I do. I'm reading it right now, sir.
So the sun was created in verse 16, but grass and stuff existed on the earth in verse 11. Now, that suggests that the earth, according to your Bible, is older than the sun. But we know that's not true.
But in verse 4, so it says in verse 3, let there be light. Then in verse 4.
I don't give a shit about light. I said, which is older? Which is older, the sun or the earth?
It's called night. So I would have to say the sun, even according to this, the sun.
You think the sun is older when it says in your Bible,
type of light.
When it's, oh my God, it's impossible to have a conversation with you. You're going to keep interrupting. I'm just going to keep talking over you. In your Bible, the order of creation events doesn't match what you're saying.
But then in verse 9, it says, let the waters under the sky be gathered together into one place and then let dry land appear. So land wasn't there until verse 9.
Yes, that's before, yes, your land on earth was there in verse 9 when the sun doesn't begin to exist until verse 16. Genesis 1 gets the order of events wrong.
But in verse 5, it says that...
Jesus Christ. What difference it make what it says in verse 5 if it says the sun is created in verse 16?
Nice.
Marie, are you making the claim that when it says, let there be light, that's the sun? But then it's just mentioned later or something like that? Like, you keep coming back to the word light.
Yes, possibly, yes. Because it says specifically in verse 5, God called the light day and the darkness he called night. And there
yes,
was
but that's not a sun. Verse 16 is the creation of the sun and the stars. And we know that the sun and the stars are older than the earth.
But do you think that the stars...
Do you think your God is an idiot? Do you think that your God inspired a book that could get the order of creation so wrong that you would have to actually try and massage it? Why couldn't your God get it right? Why couldn't your God say, I did this and I did it in this order and it exactly matches up with what we find?
I believe it does.
You're wrong. You're wrong, and I've demonstrated you're wrong. You can believe whatever you want, but your Bible has things in this order. A beginning, a primitive earth, light, an expanse or atmosphere, large areas of dry land, then land plants, then the sun, the moon, and the stars, then sea monsters and sea creatures, then wild and tame beasts and mammals, and then man. And that's not the right order. The right order is beginning, light, sun and stars, earth, moon, and atmosphere, dry land, sea creatures, some land plants. All this is coming from the Talk Origins Archive, an index to creationist claims. This is not even controversial. And yet you are still going to sit here and say, oh, I know it says that the sun and the stars were created down in verse 16, but it says light back then, before this. And since I know, because I understand a little bit about science, that light had to be around in order for there to be plants, I'm just going to go ahead and say that light was either good enough or the sun. That's not the way science works.
Because it says that it was for light and day. I mean, for night and day.
Yes. And night and day is not a thing.
What do you mean night and day is not a thing? But
night and day is about the earth revolving on its axis, not about a sun. It is relative, not absolute. There is no point at which it is night or day on earth.
It's the rotation of the earth on its axis that causes it, correct?
Yes. There's no point at which it is night or day on earth as a general thing. It's relative. But what you're talking about is when you say that you think that the order of events in Genesis doesn't conflict with science, you're not looking at the order of events in Genesis. You're looking at your personal massaged interpretation of the order of events in Genesis. It got it wrong.
I have a question. What is the definition of the Big Bang Theory?
Big Bang cosmology is an attempt by science to best explain the expansion of the universe. It's not a settled category. It has nothing to do with evolution.
Yeah, it's just basically you take what we're seeing and you reverse the clock on it and it goes back to a single...
Either, point. Necessarily. The only part of evolution that I think conflicts is the saying that things came from a single cell organism and then, you know, in my mind, they crawl out the ocean. So that part, I don't believe. But it says that everything was created in its kind. And from there, after everything was created in its kind, when things began to multiply, I can see from there over the plenty of years that have started since then, that animals could have changed.
Yes, that's because you haven't bothered to look into the actual science. It's completely understandable that you would have this sort of thing. That you think, see, there's lots of different ways to try to make the Bible match what we know with science. One of the things is to do day age creationism, where it says, when it says that God did this on the day, it was actually a long period of time. But that's not what it literally means or says. And so you don't have any evidence for that. And then when it says, hey, these animals were created in these forms, you're going to be like, oh, well, that means they didn't change. So maybe God created them and then they started changing. But your maybes and your speculations of what you'd like the text to say aren't science, and they aren't consistent with the scientific models of the world. They cannot and do not teach us anything true about it. And even if the order of creation events in Genesis were correct, that still wouldn't prove that they happened by the influence of a God. It just doesn't work.
So taking necessarily the God portion out of it, you know, doesn't the events in this my argument is that the events do not actually conflict with.
You're wrong. You are wrong. You are demonstrably wrong. We've already demonstrated this. By the way, you should maybe consider going to look at other religions to see how consistent they are with the scientific facts. It's not remotely surprising that when people are saying, hey, how did everything get started? That they describe a process that could be massaged and understood as consistent with what actually happened. That's not surprising, but we got to go because we're past time, and I appreciate the time. Call us back another time. On that note, I apologize. Everybody's going to be like, oh, you were so nice, and then you were nasty to that. No, I wasn't. We're 4 minutes over time, and there's a lot going on, and it's like, oh, what's verse 16 say? If you don't create the stars and the sun until after there's an earth with vegetation on it, you are no longer consistent with the scientific finding. It's just period.
Yeah, it has an order. It's very explicit.
Now, it could be that she's completely correct, that there's a God who did it all and did it in the right order, and that maybe Genesis just didn't write it down in a way that's really easy to understand. And that's what takes me right back to what I said to the last caller, which is, if that's true, then there's a God who's had thousands of years to clear this stuff up and instead would rather see people who don't know anything about science and people haven't bothered to look into the actual understanding of evolution call into a show where there are no scientists. Oops, sorry. I'm not a scientist at all to argue for what their personal interpretation is. It's just about as useless as a big black horse in a cherry tree.
Oh my God, calling it back.
On that note, I want to thank my friend David McCraney, who's doing wonderful things. Please check out the youarenotsosmart.com to find out what he's up to next. I know that there are big announcements coming as well, but you know.
Oh yeah, I can announce it. We'll say
you right can. Here.
I'm two things. I'm working on a new book called It's called How Minds Change. It's about persuasion and social change and all that stuff. It comes out next year. And also we are currently in the process of making a new show with the great James Burke. And that's as far as I can take that information, but there you go.
There you go. Anyway, thanks for that. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to the crew who are here way before everything gets started to make sure that things are going to work out, technically speaking. Thanks to every one of you who were watching live. If you were able to donate, I didn't see what our total was up there, but I'm grateful for that. There's also all the things that I mentioned at the start of the show, including the YouTube membership and Patreon. We'll be back again next week with one of our wonderful regular co-hosts. Until then, please, you don't have to believe science. But it would be nice if a few more of you would at least try to do what the scientific experts are suggesting with regard to health and crises around the planet. Please take care of yourself. Take care of your loved ones. Take care of some people that you don't know about by being smart, following the restrictions, and doing what we can in this difficult time to make sure that one of these days we'll be able to break out of our homes and have a big fucking group hug somewhere on this planet. We'll see you next time. Why do